you guys that are listening. So we want everybody sitting up there that's listening to make sure you go to your phone, dial 1-800-439-5732. See, I'm giving out the 800 number for all those folks who are going, man, my phone bill is too high. We just gave you a free phone number, and all you have to do is just give us the $100 pledge. We have a lot of people in the studio that's ready to take your calls, and it's going to be all good. We'll be good. Dennis will be good. We'll all be happy, and we could call it a day.
510-848-5732. I'm Dennis Bernstein. That's Davey D. We're going to come back. We're going to take a short musical break, and we'll be back with another hour of this national teach-in on Pacifica Radio. Stay with us.
We believe that as people living in the United States, it's our responsibility to resist the injustices done by our government in our name. Not in our name will you wage endless war. There can be no more deaths, no more transfusions of blood for oil. Not in our name will you invade countries, bomb civilians, kill more children, letting history take its course over the graves of the nameless. Not in our name will you supply the weapons and funding for the annihilation of families on foreign soil. Not by our mouths will we let fear silence us. Not by our hearts will we allow all peoples, all countries to be deemed evil. Not by our will and not in our name. Resistance. We pledge alliance with those who have come under attack, voicing opposition to the war for their religion or ethnicity. We pledge to make common cause with the people of the world to bring about justice, freedom, and peace. Another world is possible, and we pledge to make it real.
Another world is possible,
and we pledge to make it real.
Another world is possible.
If you're just tuning in, folks, we are doing a live broadcast here in Berkeley, but we're being heard all over the country. I want everybody to know that we have a live studio audience. Why don't you make noise for everybody out there? It's a three-hour teach-in, and I'm your co-host, Davey D. from Hard Knock Radio, and of course we have the legendary Dennis Bernstein from Flashpoints, who is spearheading this, and on our phone lines we have Michael Ratner. And before we went to break, Michael, you were getting ready to tell us about Patriot Act 2, which is something that caught everybody by surprise. What's happening with that?
It sure did. It was supposed to be secret, and it just shows how far to the right and how nuts these guys who are running our government are. Patriot 2, secret legislation, hasn't passed yet, but they're pushing it. Let's just talk about three big things in there. One is, you know, a lot of states have these court decrees that prohibit certain kinds of spying on our political activities by the local police. We have one in New York, or we had one until right before this March. They have them in Seattle, they had them in California, they had them in Chicago. Patriot Act 2 basically says there should be no validity to any federal court decree that in any way limits the gathering of information, in other words, political activity information, by police departments. Wipes out with one piece of legislation, one paragraph, every single federal court decree in the country. That's pretty heavy. These are court decrees that we put in a huge struggle for over years when there was all this government spying going on in the 60s and the 70s. Wiped out in one line. I should say one word about that. We had that court in New York right before the big march a few days ago. Basically said that our court decree that limited police spying had to be basically modified to allow more police spying because of the so-called war, et cetera, et cetera. And it's interesting that that happened right before the march, because you know what happens at these marches. The cops put cameras up on every pole, take photographs of everybody, start their files that you guys were talking about on who are the activists and who are the people they want to pinpoint. That's
right,
one thing the Patriot Act is going to do.
And right here in the Bay Area, we've had several people get visits in the middle of the night. One is, what's the guy that does a lot of work with the Filipinos for Affirmative Action? I forget the organization, but Coal. He was organizing a lot of people who were finding that their jobs were going to be eliminated when they, at the airports, all of a sudden on, I think it was January 20th, middle of the night, he got a visit from the FBI. 2 a.m, took him out to the car and asked him if he knew folks from Al-Qaeda. So it's meant to intimidate a lot of people, and it's not far-fetched. It's happening.
Well, it does intimidate. You know, when I was in the 70s in law school, you know, if you knew you were going to be surveilled at a demonstration, a lot of people were afraid to go. They couldn't get to be lawyers. You know, so it is a big, big deal what's going on. And that's number one on the Patriot Act. Number two, this is incredible to me. If you're convicted of the crime of so-called aiding a terrorist organization, now, let's say what that is. First, the U.S. designates the terrorist organization. So it could have been the ANC, you know, 20 years ago.
African National Congress.
Right. If you're convicted of aiding a terrorist organization, even with a blanket because of their hospital or, you know, humanitarian aid, if you're convicted of that crime, you can be stripped of your citizenship. Even if you're a native-born American, born here, they can take away your citizenship. They haven't answered what happens to you after that. What do? Stay in jail? That's pretty heavy. I don't know of any time, you know, remind you like medieval laws or biblical laws or something. And the third thing, which is also incredible, if you get charged with a crime of terrorism, just charged, not found guilty, nothing. They say that you should not get bail. The presumption against you should not be to give you any bail at all. So basically, they do an indictment against you, boom-o, into jail, and no way to get out. Those are just three of the, oh, then the fourth one, the Freedom of Information Act. You know, Ashcroft started to cut that down almost immediately after he got into office. And right now, they are doing, with this new Patriot Act 2, they're going to make it even worse than it's been. He's basically going to say any information concerning any detained person, these are these 3,000 Muslims I was talking about picked up after 9/11, the 600 people in Guantanamo, some of whom I represent, the people who are allegedly might be being tortured out in Diego Garcia and Bargham in Afghanistan. No information can come out if you ask for it under the Freedom of Information Act. We're talking about, you know, I wrote an article, and Dennis and I talked about this 6 months after 9/11 called Moving Toward a Police State. Let me tell you guys, we've arrived. And in New York, when we had the decision changing the surveillance guidelines a week ago, and then we had the most remarkable decision I think I've seen in my career, which is to deny the right of that demonstration to actually march through the city streets because of the so-called security threat. You see how this all works together. They scare the hell out of us. Then they basically take away our civil liberties, and then the courts go right along with it.
And then, Michael, and please talk to this, they have begun to turn co-workers against each other, citizens against each other. They have these sort of phony emergency orange alerts, and we saw at the end of last week that they were talking about how it's important now for people who work in various settings to keep an eye on their fellow workers.
You know, Dennis, that to me, you know, if we could just have written the Orwell book, you know, on this program, and then we'll probably write it the next hour. But, you know, that's exactly right. And you saw what, I mean, this started already a year or two ago. This was the TIPS program. You know, the Operation TIPS, where your meter maid, your person who reads your meter, you're supposed to say if they saw your picture of Rosa Luxemburg or Che Guevara on the wall, you know, or Malcolm X, presumably, or anybody else, they were supposed to report that and make basically spies out of all the people who had any reason to enter your house and your friends. And remember those people who were picked up, those three guys going down to be medical doctors down in Miami, they were picked up because somebody, you know, saw a Muslim-looking person, and they said, Jesus, they're talking about something, who knows what. And they were just three guys going down to medical school, and they got picked up. So neighbor on neighbor, and let me tell you, it's going to be child on father one day.
You know what's even scarier is the fact that when we had the last orange alert, now we're finding out that it was based upon false information. And what's really interesting to observe is that the mainstream media conveniently forgot that we had another high colored alert a couple of months ago that was also based on false information. So twice we had false information, but under the pretext of that high alert, we were able to get some sort of legislation or at least the dialogue moved in a direction that is even more draconian than it was prior to it. And that's
really
scary.
You brought that out because that's right. I mean, last time, remember, those guys that supposedly snuck in from Canada and all that stuff, and they're totally false. This one also, false information again. And look what they did with it. They went into court in New York, and they got a federal judge and then three judges on the Court of Appeals, two of them somewhat liberal, to say, well, because of this orange alert, we think it's too insecure in this city to allow you to march through the streets of New York. Amazing. This march, they're letting in 3 weeks from now, or 4 weeks from now, we're going to have the Irish parade in New York, the St. Patrick's Day parade. And they're right through this, right through Fifth Avenue, right through the city. And we couldn't have a march, an anti-war on the of the day.
They didn't have any of that during the Super Bowl. I was down there. They didn't prevent that from happening. And they had hundreds of thousands of people out in the streets there.
Right. We're talking about using those alerts to push through legislation to scare the heck out of courts and the American people, and to think that unless we go bomb the heck out of Iraq, you know, we're all going to be wiped out, when in fact, obviously, to me, it's the opposite that's true. The risk of us being wiped out is a lot higher if we go bomb Iraq.
Michael Ratner, Center for Constitutional Rights, president, a longtime civil libertarian. Michael, stand by. I have a feeling some of us in the media are going to be calling you from jail cells, too.
Oh, let me just say, that's one thing I think is important, because you guys mentioned about how people are getting visits from the FBI and stuff. And even on this demonstration in New York, the FBI, the city police and the FBI started calling people around the country saying, what's your organization? How long have you been in the organization? And there's two pieces of advice. One is you don't have to talk to the cops or the FBI. That's number one. And number two, you can always say, and if you want to say this, you can say you're represented by an attorney. Call my attorney. I don't want to talk to you. If you're in our area, obviously you can say call the Center for Constitutional Rights. If you're in the West Coast, there's people. That's what to do. You do not have to talk to these guys.
And the third thing, which I've been telling people, don't do anything that you think is normal, because it can all of a sudden have serious consequences. A lot of people smoke weed. Don't carry a joint or anything like that. People might snicker, but they can use those excuses to pick you up and then start running roughshod over you. So I think we just all need to be very aware of what we're doing, who we're affiliating with, because some of these things could be set up.
Davey, you know, in the 60s, we wrote a book, friends of mine, called The Bust Book, and it was about how not to be busted at demonstrations. One of the pieces of advice was sew your pockets up, because the cops will plant grass on you. Mm-hmm. They will plant it.
All right. Michael Ratner, Center for Constitutional Rights, thanks for being with us.
Keep up the great work.
And you, too. Thanks for being with us on this national teach-in. And, Davey, I don't know if you heard, but the FCC paid a visit to our sister station in Washington, D.C.
Really?
WPFW. It just so happened that John Conyers was on the air when the FCC came in for what they said was a normal, random visit of our sister station. When did they come in? What a coincidence. You mean the day before national protests, in which Pacifica is sort of the electronic leaflet right in the middle? Well, they were in there checking, doing a routine checkup.
Well, you know, the thing behind that, I was back there when it happened. John Conyers had told a lot of people at this conference we were at to come in full force to have a conversation with Michael Powell, who was speaking. I actually got a chance to meet the guy for a brief minute. Real nice guy, but very, you know, evasive, I guess is the best word.
Well, we've got so much we want to get in the remaining 45 minutes of this broadcast. In a few minutes, we're going to be going to Daniel Ellsberg, a legendary figure, perhaps the most famous whistleblower of our time, who blew the lid off of the Vietnam War by releasing the secret lying history. God, we need a document like that now. Daniel will be talking to us about that, but we want to get to some kids who I think are standing by. We've got two seventh graders. Curtis Corner, a public middle school in Rhode Island. That's the Curtis Corner School, a public middle school in Rhode Island. That's right. And we got Michaela Cashman and Catalin Collins. Is that right?
No.
All right. Well, what are your names? Tell us who you are and where you are. What's your names?
My name is Michaela Cashman.
Yes.
My name is Caitlin Collins.
Okay, Michaela Cashman and Caitlin Collins. You've been studying and practicing nonviolence since fifth grade, when your class there took a civil rights tour of the South and studied the work of Martin Luther King. Now you've started a new organization. Do you want to tell us about your organization and what you're both doing? You could start... Michaela.
Okay. What do I say? We were working on an organization for the Peace Club called Peace Club, and it helps with a bunch of other kids. And we all know a certain level of Kingian nonviolence. And let's see, we train other kids that want to be part of it, and we keep on training and more kids, so we get the ripple effect where more and more kids know about it and more kids get educated.
Let me ask you this. It's called Children's Appeal for Peace. Is that the name of it?
That's a different organization, and that's what I'm doing currently with students from Bayview.
Okay. Let me ask you guys this. Is it hard to get your classmates and other folks that you come across to really embrace the message of peace, especially when so many people seem to say it's okay to go to war and to commit violence?
Yeah. Well, it depends.
It depends who you're talking to. If they've gone through things and they're mature enough to realize that peace is the answer, then it's not that hard. But if you really have to teach them, then...
How do you teach them?
Just by showing examples in everyday life.
Okay. What could some of the people that are listening all across the country and in this audience do to help spread your message and get others to maybe practice peace?
I think one of the biggest things is to just show by example and in everyday life, like the way you solve a problem. And just by... petition drive as well.
And let me ask, before we let both of you go, let me ask you, why should grown-ups listen to kids?
I think we're the future, and we look up to the adults, and they influence us, so we look up to them, and we want them to hear us so that they help make a good future for tomorrow.
All right. Well, that's Michaela Cashman and Ketelyn Collins.
Yeah.
Two seventh graders joining us, a new movement for peace from a new generation. And I'm Dennis Bernstein. That's Davey D. And this is a national special. This is a teach-in. This is a three-hour teach-in sponsored by Flashpoints and Pacifica Radio. And we thought that it would be very important to follow on the heels of these massive demonstrations that are taking place across the country and around the world.
What do you think Bush would tell them, you know, after hearing that? Would he say, well, you know, kids... I understand peace is good, but we have to go to... what do you say to something like that?
It is beyond belief. Davey, I taught for about 15 years.
Mm-hmm.
I spent a lot of time with young people. I taught media literacy in the South Bronx. And we did an investigation in terms of why did the South Bronx look like Hiroshima after the war? And what the kids discovered was the government was so busy spending zillions of dollars on weapons that they didn't have any money to rebuild their neighborhoods, to rebuild the schools. And these kids are very hip to that.
Yeah, I remember during that time the city of New York was going through a fiscal crisis, and they fired 19,000 people to save money. 15 of the 19 were school teachers.
It's amazing. I think we're now joined by Daniel Ellsberg. Are you there, Dan?
Yes, I am.
Dan, it's good to have you with us. We've been talking about a lot of different issues over the last 3 hours, but you are really a veteran of resisting government lies. Your experience with the Vietnam War has a lot to do with what's happening now and how the government did lie to the people to get us into Vietnam, but it does seem that the people now in this year, 2003, have a jump on the government. Do you want to talk a little bit about what you learned then and what we can gain from that?
Well, of course, in the corresponding phase of the Vietnam War, there wasn't anything like this kind of demonstrating going on. There was a major demonstration early on in the bombing in 1965, April 17th, 1965. I actually attended that, it so happens, though I was working in the Pentagon at the time, because the woman who later and has ever since been my wife was going to that, and that was the only way I could see her that day. So I took my day off from the Pentagon and heard Joan Baez that day, as I just heard her a week ago in San Francisco. And the difference, though, was, as I say, the that was 25,000, very big for that day. This must have been 10 or 20 times as large what I've been, the crowd I've been walking with today in New York. So people have learned that much from the Vietnam War, that their voice must come out as early as possible and as loudly as possible against a reckless, wrongful war. In that sense, it's encouraging. But, of course, our chance of stopping the momentum of this wrongful war, I would say, is not large. It's just that it's possible. It can be done. And that's why we were out there today.
And, Dan, would you talk a little bit about the nature of civil liberties? You were definitely attacked once people realized what you were up to. And the Pentagon Papers were out. That was the secret history of the Vietnam War. They came after you, and you were saying that what they did to you then was illegal, but if it was today, it would be legal.
They were concerned not by the fact that I had put out the top secret history of the war, the Pentagon Papers, which ended in 1968 or before Nixon came in, but when Nixon realized that I did have documents on his administration and feared that I had more than I did, that I really could demonstrate, for example, that he was making secret nuclear threats at that time, as early as 1969. He decided he had to shut me up. Even though I was on trial, he had to make sure that I wouldn't put out more documents. So he did things like sending former or current even CIA assets and agents into the office of my former psychoanalyst in order to get information that he could blackmail me with, and blackmail me into silence. When that didn't work, they couldn't have blackmailed me into silence, and they didn't get what they wanted anyway. At another point, he brought people up to intimidate me, or perhaps beat me up or kill me even, at a rally in 1973 while I was on trial. 1972. While I was under indictment. But they also had me wiretapped. They had the CIA, they had me overheard on a wiretap of NSC people. They had the CIA doing a psychological profile on me, which was then illegal for the CIA to be doing operations against an American citizen in this country. Well, as you suggested in your question, the difference under the Patriot Act now, acting under the fear created in this country by 9/11, they got an act passed which makes virtually all of those things legal. The kinds of things that Nixon did against me, which were so clearly criminal at that time that he had to cover them up by acts of bribery of the people involved, paying money to Howard Hunt and others, which was a further instruction of justice, in order paying him in order to keep him lying in front of a grand jury. He wouldn't have to do that now, the president, if he'd done the same things, because going into an analyst's office without a warrant to get information on a national security risk of some kind, that would be legal under the Patriot Act. A warrantless wiretap would no longer have to be concealed by him. Again, it would be legal. And the CIA operating on American citizens, the Patriot Act has just allowed for that, along with the FBI. To coordinate with the FBI is basically a domestic police agency. So our Constitution, in effect, has changed. Our protections under the Bill of Rights have been very considerably eroded. That's a very ominous direction in this latest draft, which, by the way, seems to have been leaked very appropriately. Somebody creditably leaked that, an unauthorized disclosure, in time, possibly, to get some controversy going and to get it stopped. But the Patriot Act II, so-called, which even further extends these measures in the direction of a police state, is facing us, and it's up to us to stop it.
You know, one of the differences, and I don't know if it's a difference, but it definitely seems like now folks who would be backing a Patriot Act 1 or 2 or whatever seem to have in position a number of people in media outlets to echo the message and almost do the spin on behalf of those who want to put it forth. And I'm not sure if that's different, say, today than it might have been 20, 30 years ago. In other words, you might have a Bill O'Reilly all of a sudden champion this sort of stuff, and all of a sudden you have newscasters on TV saying, oh, this just might be a good idea because the orange alert is going to be even higher if we don't, and et cetera, et cetera. So how should we be counteracting that so that people do get the message out and they don't get it presented to them with the spin already in place?
You know, one asset we have now that we didn't have then, we had Pacifica then, I guess, but we didn't have the Internet. And there is the possibility now of getting, of coordinating information, getting information from all over the country in a much better way than you can get it from any given newspaper or, I would say, any media outlet. And, again, really, except for Pacifica, say, but, you know.
Well, the Internet
nationwide, not everyone listens. Not everybody even has access to it.
The Internet is a real interesting thing now, because what I'm finding happening is that political groups are finding that their news listservs are getting banned or blocked. Because some of these companies that control those main outlets, like the Yahoo groups and what have you, are looking and saying, oh, you have questionable material. In fact, some places they're actually banned because they say they might be linking to terrorists.
Well, I'm sure there will be a major effort on their part to control this new form of information. And we have to be alert to that and see if we can get around it. I must say, I have the impression that there's a lot of 18-year-olds around there or, who are pretty good at outrunning some of the older folks who are trying to control it. So I have some hopes that we'll still keep at it. But there are, I happen to be watching, for example, looking at antiwar.com, and there's commondreams.org and buzzflash.com. You get a lot of information on those. And this the Bill of Rights Defense Committee has been putting out a lot of good information on the Patriot Act and the ACLU on the threats to our freedoms.
Okay. Well, Dan Ellsberg, before we say goodbye, just in 30 seconds, you were saying, and I think you were pretty serious, this was not hyperbole, that you fear that people who are speaking out now, people like yourself and people at Pacifica, could very well be targeted, arrested, and be held just by virtue of trying to communicate information that the government will labor as sort of in support of terrorism.
I think we have an administration here which is exploiting a genuine threat of terrorism. I think the terrorist threat is real. And the threat to our freedoms is also very real under this administration. We have people addressing the terrorist threat who do not at the same time have a real concern or understanding or appreciation of civil liberties in this country. There are steps that have to be taken for surveillance and on the airlines and everything else. We'd be very, very much better off if those were being addressed by people who took seriously the problem of civil liberties and preserving those at the same time. And we don't have that. I think we have people who would be perfectly prepared to move in the direction of mass detentions. As a matter of fact, they've done that, of course, already with secret detentions of Middle Easterners. And anyone who thinks that it's going to stay on Middle Easterners, so it isn't their problem somehow because they don't happen to be Muslim or aliens or Middle Easterners, is, I think, very naive. The analogy that comes to my mind is how apathetic and people were toward the AIDS menace, the AIDS epidemic, so long as they thought it was confined to gays, which they didn't happen to be gay. That was extremely short-sighted, as well as inhumane and wrong from the beginning. I think we're facing the same kind of threat to our civil liberties now, and it can extend very far in this society. We're seeing an enormous amount of dissent to a very wrongful policy. I don't think the administration is ready to give up these imperial policies very quickly, if at all. And they know now that they can foresee a great deal of dissent for them. These people, I think, then are willing to use every means they have, legal and illegal, and things that used to be illegal are getting to be legal for them. I'm sure they will go, by the way, beyond those. They'll continue to do illegal things that go beyond it and try to stretch the boundaries of the legal as well at the same time.
Right.
But I think, yes, they're